Parentheses,
two,
intro
one.
Music in parentheses.
You are listening to the Story Soil podcast, where we build science fiction and fantasy worlds from the ground up. I'm Lauren Harris, and I'm a basket of weasels, badly masquerading as a fantasy author. With me today are that deceptively professional Sturgeon supervisor, Dr. Sarah Tabor. You did your name weird. And corporate calendar masseuse, Adrian Erickson. I am not going to get this in her right way, guys.
Take 52.
Stay tuned for outtakes. Well, welcome to the discussion episode all about electric reefs. Stick around as Adrian and I push Sarah further toward the deep end with questions, comments, and uncomfortable warm spots. But first, a Sarah PSA.
Two things, I guess. Yes, you are correct about the vodka and jam jars. That shit is deadly. Don't do that while podcasting. It just tastes so good.
So anyway, maybe do it while podcasting, but
do it. Just be ready.
Don't have high expectations.
Yeah. Also.
Yeah, lower your expectations.
Right. I feel like I should be clear.
Glass.
We don't really know how like peoples in the Amazon made their charcoal. We just know that there is a bunch of junk in it. It's mostly household trash and some human waste. So we can't exactly say how they did. I feel like the way I said it, like the way I remember it is like, oh yeah, they just threw baskets of poop onto a fire. Like we don't know if that's actually how it worked. It could be.
But that's where we went.
It. Yeah, they just got together somehow. It just sounds like it would smell. Moving on.
Yeah.
So
there are electric reefs.
Yes. Okay. So this is one of those things in science every once in a while that you run into where like, that sounds like total bullshit. And then it turned out to really be a thing. And I was a little surprised. I was a lot surprised. It also sounds like something Janelle Monáe would really be into. And that's great.
If Janelle is into it, I'm into it, including Lupita Nyong'o. I mean, like, especially
just all the good
Nyong'o.
Things together, all the good people. So the way they found this out, I think it actually goes back to somebody in the 1800s was trying to develop like a cladding for ships that wouldn't get stuff living on it. They started with copper because they found that like copper plating ships, you're not going to get like all the shipworms and everything and the wood. And they're like, this is great. What if we electrified it? So however you do that in the 1800s, they did it. So they set up like little electric current. There's an anode, there's a cathode. And, they found that stuff was starting to grow on copper, which should never happen because copper is kind of, you know, toxic. We use it to kill things in septic tanks, you know, like it just stuff's not supposed to live there. But if you set up a current, it would happen. So they abandoned that because they want things to not grow. And then fast forward, like, I don't know, maybe a century to oil rigs. So if you build an oil rig in the ocean, that's a big metal thing in the salt water. It's going to rust, right? So there's this whole like area of engineering of like, how do we make our metal thing in the ocean not rust and fall apart? So one of them, obviously, you can paint it with like rust proof paints and that kind of thing, protective coatings. Another way they tried it was like, well, what if we, you know, give a little juice, give a little electric current? Because if you put like a mild current through there, then the iron or the steel is not going to oxidize. So they tried that. And so not only did it work, you know, like you weren't getting the steel oxidizing, but you're actually getting minerals from the seawater like precipitating onto the steel surface and the iron surface, whatever they were making rigs out of. And then critters that build skeletons out of calcium carbonate. So like bivalves, you know, oysters, clams, corals, crustose, algaes, things like that were just growing gangbusters on the oil rig struts that had a little bit of current going through them. And people were like, what the fuck, man? I mean, this is fine. It's kind of like a protective coating. It's not rusting. This is okay. But there's so much growth that every once in a while we have to send scuba divers down there to like chip it off.
Buzzed mollusks.
So that was kind of a thing. And it was like, it was kind of like just a little bit of a nuisance for oil rigs. and it's funny too, because like environmentalism in the South works different, right? So like there are whole parts of the Northern Gulf of Mexico where like red snapper, the only reason it lives in a whole area is because there's oil rigs, because the Gulf of Mexico is just kind of a mud bowl. There's not really places for reef dwelling fish to live except for oil rigs. So, that's weird. So like you get kind of like this weird tension between people being like, we need to get rid of the oil rigs, which is very true. And then other people being like, but where are we going to go fishing?
okay. So like basically what's happening is the oil rigs, because they're lightly electrified to keep them from rusting, they are attracting these
critters and mollusks and algae and stuff. And then also attracting other reef-loving things because they're becoming.
So, like, to be clear, I'm a biologist. Electrochemistry is not my bag. And so there's a lot of people who could tell you better, like, exactly how the precipitation chemistry of this works. But for whatever reason, just like critters that build calcium carbonate skeletons just have a way easier time doing it. Like, it just takes less energy for them to do it. So they grow a lot faster on metal structures like the cathode, not the anode side, but the cathode surfaces. They just have an easier time growing there. And fish that like to live on reefs, like, they don't know or care if it's an oil rig as opposed to like a natural coral reef. So they're just like, sweet, there's like coral everywhere, or like oysters everywhere. I'm going to live here. So like, yeah, that was an accident. That was like unintentional reef building for like not that constructive of a purpose, environmentally speaking. And then some people, right, you're like terraforming with oil rigs. Yay. Then some folks were like, well, what if we did this on purpose? You know, because we have to build things like not just oil rigs, but we have to build like coastal protection. Like if we want to build seawalls that protect coastlines from hurricanes, but actually have them work, because that's the problem we've had is humans are really bad at building coastal protection because we keep trying to build like straight lines and solid barriers, and like seawater and waves just beat the crap out of it. But natural structures mm-hmm. like reefs stand up to that very well because they're shaped very differently. They're like rough. They're self-healing. You know, if you break off a piece of oysters or coral, like it's going to regrow slowly, but it does regrow, right? So these things have evolved for billions of years to stand up really well to wave action, to be able to grow back. So some guys are like, well, what if we just grew artificial electrified reefs on purpose? You know, there's kind of a story as to how they got there, but you have, so you have like various people around the world who are doing this, you know, like either on it, like a kind of a consulting contractor-ish basis. There's some people doing it themselves. I just found a great webpage for some folks in Thailand who like basically got taken through a really expensive outside contractor build project. They watched how they did it and they're like, fuck this, man. Like, we can build our own reefs now. And so they're just like going crazy, making gorilla reefs or something in Thailand, which is just fantastic. Yeah. Scuba dive clubs.
Gorilla correct. Reefs in Thailand.
I'm like, this is the kind of like anarchism we need, right? but it's good for fishing. And what's really interesting to me is, at least one of the groups that I talked to that builds these things was like, yeah, the only people we can get to actually pay for it and then like do the maintenance to keep it there. Cause like it is electrical components in salt water and there's lots of waves. Like they do need a little bit of maintenance, right? It's nothing crazy, but you got to keep an eye on them. So the only places that will pay to get one installed and then actually keep up with it are like fancy tropical hotels with over the water bungalows. So they can advertise to people that there is like beautiful reef diving right off of your deck. It's wild to me that we have this crazy like environmental innovation that can do so much good, and those are the only people who will do it. That's crazy.
That's, I mean,
marketing, not surprising. Marketing.
Yeah. So that's that. And mm-hmm. I don't really know what else to say about it. I'm like, yeah, you can just build reefs out of rebar and like a couple of electrical components. Turns out, who knew?
Do they function in many ways environmentally just like a natural reef would?
Yeah. So, okay. So here's the thing is a lot of times when people talk about making artificial reefs, like it's basically just like dumping ships and cars and like there's one where they tried to quote make a reef out of just like dumping a bunch of tires into the ocean and it was a disaster because no. Yeah. And they just kind of like bounce around right? underwater and they all wound up washing back on shore. And then they had like a beach full of tires. So like that's a lot
of, I'm seeing some kind of like katamari
yeah
situation
and so you'll have a lot of like artificial reef like attempts that are like, you know, they'll scuttle a ship or something and like yeah it's a hiding place where fish will hide out, but like a lot of time critters have a, like things like bivalves, algaes, corals, they have a kind of a hard time growing on just plain old metal. I mean they'll do it eventually.
Well, and you get the rust situation that happens. And, you know, if you've got people diving, they're not pretty.
Yeah, I mean, like shipwrecks are like kind of fun, but like at some point you're like, maybe we should have some coral. Yeah.
So then a shipwreck is fun. I mean, there's certainly like something to be said about the just cool aspect of sunken things.
So here's a question.
Sorry, Adrian, go ahead.
So, you know, we keep sinking all this shit. and trying to make things grow on it, mm-hmm. and it not really working. And yet with this sort of electrified trial, it works. So what, a natural reef that's not electrified, why yeah. does it work? Does it have some form of natural electricity because of the fact that it's, I think, correct me if I'm wrong, I am not even remotely a biologist.
It's just because
a natural reef is kind of a living thing, then it has sort of that life electricity?
So it's not about that. It's just like it's, you know, like in a location where those organisms live and they'll grow. They just grow a lot faster on like cathode components.
So you're not getting like coral.
Oh, yeah.
Like the pretty tropical coral that we think of.
The Gulf of Mexico is not really necessarily coral territory, but if you put them in places like oceans where, areas of the ocean. Mm-hmm, yeah.
Where the ocean's warm enough. Also, question about these electric reefs. Like they're chill with the calcium carbonate skeleton having creatures, but like if we touch them, is there an issue? How will we be like, ooh, I'm diving in this beautiful little coral reef outside my expensive fancy hotel where I just paid $1,000 a night. I'm going to go down here and I'm going to pet the coral.
Yeah, not so much. That would be a hazard. And like, I feel like it would just be hard to be. It'd be hard to be a fish.
Because I'm also thinking about like electricity and water.
A fish in that situation. It's like a really mild current. The amperage and I believe also the voltage are both really low. So we're not talking about a ton of current. It's more just like it just makes it easier for calcium carbonate to precipitate in the, I think is what's going on. And it's less energetically expensive for critters that make calcium carbonate to live there. And so they just grow faster.
Because it attracts it. Because I'm thinking like the metal plating things that you do when you put electricity in water to plate something in gold or to plate something. Usually you use like a nickel or something like that or aluminum, and you plate like jewelry or you plate things because they're lightly electrified and it plates it in that other metal. So I'm guessing it attracts some kind of alloy or
it just makes it easier for calcium carbonate to precipitate. Which is fun because among the many things climate change is doing, it's making it harder for these critters to precipitate the calcium carbonate because the ocean water is a little bit more acidic. So this is a good way to kind of counteract that. I mean, I think it's kind of a stretch to be like, yeah, we're going to build all the Earth's reefs back with like with some cathodes, right? But it's a good way to kind of build some refuges. It's a good way to like, okay, if we've got some vulnerable coastlines, we can build some underwater infrastructure to protect from wave action.
Now I don't know one of the words you just said. What is
so like if you're doing plating or electrochemistry, you have an anode and a cathode. So the, again, not an electrochemist, I could get this backwards, but I think the anode is like the one that's negatively charged, the cathode is positively charged.
And aren't the little like circular things they put on people in the medical field cathodes to pick up the electrics?
No, we call them electrodes, but
They are odes. So I'm trying to put my finger on the difference here. Like, okay, so clearly with the electric reefs, we're not constructing the entire reef. It's more like we are laying the foundation for a reef to develop, correct? So when you refer to like calcium carbonates as a non-biologist, I assume that that is kind of the coral and the stuff that makes up a normal reef now having sort of something to attach to in an abnormal situation.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So again, the electrochemistry there just makes it easier for calcium carbonate to deposit. So like, even if the water is completely sterile and nothing's living in it, there's no coral, there's no bivalves, you'll still get calcium carbonate depositing around the metal, right? So that's actually what the guys who were trying to build these things on purpose were trying to do at first. They're like, it's going to be like an alternative to concrete. We can just put some rebar in the water. We can like turn on the current and we can just build stuff like with calcium carbonate encrusted rebar. Yeah. And actually
just accumulate.
There's an artist named Colleen Flanagan, and there's a bunch of folks making this stuff, but there's this artist named Colleen Flanagan. I had her make a prototype of something for me. So she just made like this shape out of metal mesh, you know, like dunked it in a tank with some like, you know, just synthetic salts, flipped on the current, And now, like, you can't see the metal at all. It's just like this cool, like, elliptical looking shape made of calcium carbonate. Yeah.
Ooh, art collaboration yeah. with nature. And it's got,
like,
I love
really cool,
that.
Like, that's bony, great. Shelly texture.
Totally non-sciencey. What is calcium carbonate? Is there a term that I would be more familiar with? Is it because shell is the outside of a living thing? So,
yeah. So calcium carbonate is the mineral that shells and coral skeletons are made out of, or like limestone is okay. calcium carbonate. Like, it's usually coral and shells kind of like packed together, right?
So do the critters like now? This is going to be really dumb. I realize I know, like, absolutely nothing about
mollusks. I'm a biologist
trying
to do electrochemistry. It's fine. So, we're all in way over our heads
here. It's cool. Because what I'm imagining is this, like, lone globule mollusk floating around all lonely and vulnerable looking for a home, and then finding this wonderful deposit of so much calcium carbonate and saying, yes, my instincts are taking over. I will create a shell nest about myself and be protected forever until some scuba diver comes down and scrapes me off the...
Pretty much. So, like, this is the wild thing about, like, marine environments.
They have larvae. I don't know why that's blowing my mind.
Larvae?
It's really not hard to blow my mind, to be fair. But, like, I have never considered, like, oyster larvae.
They've probably thought about you, though.
Does that make oysters bugs?
God. Am I the figment of an oyster larva's dreams?
Mm-hmm. Larva, does that make oysters bugs?
They're
like
mollusks.
Sea bugs? Are they sea bugs?
They're mollusks.
Well, I guess that's kind of what mollusks are, like the cockroach of the sea.
That's shrimp.
Well, actually, that's like a lobster or shrimp. Yeah.
No, so like, okay, so this is what makes marine ecosystems like really, really different from on land ones. So like, as a crop scientist, this still kind of like blows my mind. So like, if you get a piece of land and you're like, we want to bring this back into trees, it takes a really long time. It takes a long ass time. You've probably got to fix the soil. So like some fertilizer, some ground prep, you know, like you may need to like take in a subsoil ripper or something like that. If they've been farming it bad and compacted it, you got to go in there and either like plant trees or plant seeds. You've got to take care of them. You know, like you may need to have like a certain fire regime, and then you do all that right. And it takes decades, you know, to kind of get back into working order, right? A marine environment.
Mm-hmm.
So like the ocean's just filled with plankton, right? And like at least half the plankton is like larvae and spawn of various things that like live on the ocean bottom. So you got these coral larvae kicking around. You've got like fish larvae, like, you know, shrimp, like just everything in its larval stage just floating around the oceans, right? So it's like larva soup. That's what the ocean is. And...
Yay, cold larvae.
Or it could be warm, depending on where we are. It's just great.
Warmish larvae soup.
So, like, basically, they're just kind of floating around, like, looking for a place to land, right? So that's really the big limiting factor in marine environments is, like, a lot of it's just kind of, like, I don't want to say empty, you know, but it's water. There's not a hard surface. And a lot of your critters want a hard surface. Like, coral can't just grow on nothing. It's got to have a hard surface to grow on. Your clams and your sponges, they need a hard surface to live on. A lot of your...
There's a lot of interstitial space in the
ocean. Basically, the limiting factor is just hard surfaces to live on. So if you drop a hard surface in the ocean, especially if you give it a little electric current, like pretty soon all kinds of stuff sets up shop there. And so there's this whole little field of marine biology that's about like, how do we create a nice little habitat? So like this... So electric reefs and like just electrifying metal surfaces is one thing. They also found that just like playing the sounds of a healthy reef near one that's having problems can help fish larvae settle there. Because like if you're a fish larva drifting through, you're like, is this a good neighborhood? Well, let's hear if anybody's out there. And if they're not, they're less likely to settle.
I love the idea that they need electricity and soothing music. a little oyster spa set up there going, don't worry guys, this is our luxury apartment. You've got electricity and
you're
soothing
sounds.
Sounds
like a happening place. So it's completely wild to me because we have all this knowledge on how to like make a hospital reef environment that's going to protect coastlines from serious erosion and flood damage and storms. And we're just not fucking doing it because like Like, literally, if you go to somebody and be like, hey, I can install you an electric reef, it's going to be the tits. Like, they're going to think you're crazy.
Especially if you pitch it like that. You always
pitch things like that to municipal government.
I agree with you. Just saying, you know, it's going to be the tits is like, that's the highest form of praise. When you're talking about like creating barriers with these things, can you go into that a little bit more? I know vaguely from like middle school, reefs good, break water, make not erode coastline. Can you tell me a little bit more in depth why reefs good, break water, yeah, not erode great. Coastline?
So I feel like if you just like...
Thank you for jumping on my
like. I just got stuck on breakwater, and I was like, I don't know. I don't know if reefs help.
It's not like breaking wind.
I was like, I don't know if reefs help with that.
Oh, here comes the big one. Anyway, so like, where were we? Oh man. Yes. Okay, so like, if you like
breaking water,
there we go.
Reefs good. Breakwater.
Google coastline. Like any picture of a Polynesian island from the air. Right, they usually have an atoll around them. You know, like there's a coral reef, all that stuff. So if you look at it, there's like this big ring of like white water, and that's from the waves crashing on the reef so they don't slam onto the island itself. I just feel like that's like kind of the clearest explanation. Mm-hmm. It's like you look and you're like, oh, the waves get tired before they hit shore, you know?
You'd think I'd read enough books with pirates in them to know what an atoll is. But, well, I don't just read Caribbean pirates. I also read like... pirate furries
of the Pacific,
of Wef Ravain. No, this is my friend Abigail Hilton writes a series called the Guild of the Cowrie Catchers.
Pirate furries,
and they're basically think pirate furries at war with dragons.
So for the next person who needs to write a pirate furry like series, maybe we can put this to work.
Yes, yes. I mean, you feel free to use The World We Build as the basis for a pirate furry story, just saying. Or space pirate furry story, depending on how we go with this. Electricity, so I'm making it's my guesses, but I'm not going to say.
Space reefs would be terrible. Anyway, we're going to focus.
Space reefs. Where were
we? Yeah, so like storm damage. Okay, so... yeah, just like as waves are kind of, you know, on their way towards the shore. So like we've all learned about tsunamis, right? And how the wave.
Hey, Adrian's in Japan for the tsunami. Fun. So we know things about tsunamis.
So tsunamis are like a very specific type of wave. So like they're not even really a wave when they're out in the deep ocean. It's only when they get closer to shallow water that they kind of start to pile up, right? So like waves from a hurricane storm surge, they're different, right? But they have some similarities in the fact that like as they're getting close to shore, they do kind of start to stack up. You just get really tall waves. And so if there's nothing between them and the shoreline and like there's nothing in between them and buildings, they're just going to like slap the shit out of everything. They're also going to go really far inland. And so you're going to get a lot of flooding going in pretty far. Having lived through like several hurricanes at this point.
Yeah, we all live in North Carolina. Two of us have lived in Florida. Like we're hurricane knowledgeable. Blah, blah, blah.
Practically fish people at this point. So so anything that stops waves from getting, like number one, they have less force when they hit the shore. And then once they hit the shore, they don't go as far inland. Anything you can do that's going to get you both of those things is fantastic. It's going to save you like bajillions of dollars of property damage, lots of lives, et cetera, et cetera. And the issue is, again, like we build a lot of seawalls and like, you know, breakwaters, jetties and other things in an attempt to get this effect. And none of them work for very long. Like they need tons of maintenance. You'll get a thing called scouring, which is like when the wave hits just like a smooth concrete wall. So all that force that the water's carrying with it. It's like, imagine throwing a ball of goo at a window. Like it's going to, all that forward motion is going to suddenly go outwards. It's going to go up, down, sideways. So when it goes up, that's fine. It just sprays in the air. When it goes out to the side, that's okay. It's just kind of like hitting the rest of the wall. But the water and the force that goes down is going to start digging out the foundation of the seawall. So that's like the fate of every seawall is to get dug out from under, then fall off into the ocean. And I'm like, how many fucking times do we have to try this before we figure it out, people? Seawalls don't work. It happens every time.
Because like a reef would be more like baffling. Right? Because it has lots of different crevices. So it has a lot of different little surfaces to take on different amounts of pressure.
So why don't we just do textured or folded or crinkled seawalls?
Because that's weird.
Crinkled
that's
steel.
Some hippie bullshit. Like, I'm not kidding.
Because that's weird.
Yeah, like, we could do a whole discussion. I actually have one on my podcast of, like, why it is that, like, quality green technologies just don't get adopted. But they kind of, there's a lot of reasons. One of them is, like, it just sounds weird. Again, like, if you come up to somebody and say, what if we built an artificial reef? They'd be like, that's not a real protection project. That's just some hippie mumbo jumbo. That doesn't work. We don't, because the technological valley of death, like, nobody's built one yet. So we can't point to them and, like, go, look, that's how well it works. Cause nobody's built one yet.
Okay. You're going to have to explain that. The technological valley of death.
So, like, let's say you get technology that works really well and you've proven a lab works great. Well, you still haven't reached economies of scale with making it, right? So this is with consumer goods, like the Tesla mobile, you know, like the Tesla cars was a really great example of somebody actually, like, going through with it. So they're like, okay, we can mm-hmm. make a car with a battery. Technically it works, but can we make it at a price that people are actually going to afford? So usually what happens with that is you have a bunch of venture capitalists and other rich people basically standing around in a circle going, you first. And none of them will ever nut up to do it.
Mm-hmm.
That's usually what happens.
And except Elon Musk, like a crazy who's like, man, hold my beer.
Like, also off the deep end in other ways. But there was one useful way to be off the deep end.
Yeah.
So basically, a lot of these technologies just don't have a sponsor who's willing to go off the deep end for them, if you will. And, like, make those big bets. And so, like, solar energy was in this position for a long time. It's kind of finally starting to pull out of it. And like, biochar, I did a big podcast, a couple of episodes about this. Like, it's just not, nobody's ever taken a bet on it. So even though we know how to make biochar, we know it's a great way to dispose of waste. Nobody's doing it at a commercial scale because just nobody's taken the first leap to do it. And these reefs are in the same way.
So in Japan, mm-hmm. they did yes. build an entire island out of recycled bottles. And that's basically Odaiba. So they, I mean, yep. to be fair, most of Tokyo has been constructed over the years from the seafloor. But mm-hmm. I know that the Odaiba was a project to basically take recycling and build a new structural island off the coastline. And it is now just a part of Tokyo where Scribe and I have been. And I will say that when I was there, it mm-hmm. felt steady enough that I didn't fear that I was going to fall into the ocean. But I don't know what the practicality of that on a wide scale is. I know that it is considered a weak point in terms of earthquakes and rising tides there.
But yeah, so, like, every once in a while you'll find kind of, like, one-offs like that. There's a few efforts at building artificial islands, and they all kind of seem to revolve around, like, let's just dump a bunch of stuff onto it. It could be sediment from the seafloor, it could be recycled fill material, but they're all kind of based on, like, let's just build a seawall and dump stuff into it, right? So the Biocrete, Biorock is kind of what they called just the original, like, let's make concrete out of rebar and electricity. Concept, and then they figured out that organisms like to grow on it. But, like, that approach to it, to either building land or to just building a reef, has just never really been adopted on a commercial scale.
I mean, I kind of get it, yeah. though. You get shelter and a snack.
And, like, that's the thing is, like, I don't want to, like, speak out of turn too much here, but, like, sometimes a lot of the reason that environmental and green technologies don't get picked up is because the people advocating for them are kind of, like, weird.
I mean, I've yeah. seen it.
They don't say, I'm going to build you an electric Correct. Reef. Yeah. It's going to be the
That's
tits.
What you get. They don't and so, like, that just doesn't mesh well with municipal budgeting. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
The other issue is, like, yeah, there's no money for any kind of intelligent infrastructure, right? There's all the money in the world for, like, oh, there's a hurricane. Everybody who gets insurance gets to rebuild. There's all the money in the world for that, right? But it's like insurance companies, get your shit together. If you want to stop making all these giant payouts, build some artificial reefs that actually work. The really cool thing about natural reefs, like your oyster reefs, coral reefs and stuff like that, which you can recreate with an electrified reef because it's mostly actually coral and bivalves, they have all the texture, right? So one of the reasons they have all that texture, number one, it's just easier to build that way for an organism. And number two, what they're trying to do is, like, they want to eat plankton that's suspended in the water, right? So if the water is like screaming past them, it's a lot harder to reach out and grab it, right? So they want to slow the water down. So they've evolved for billions of years to be really good at slowing down raging water. And they're just like really good at it. Yeah. But humans are not really good at communicating that effectively to others.
Let this be the podcast.
Yeah. And I mean, like,
we should raise money to build an electric reef around,
yeah,
like the Outer Banks.
The Outer Banks can pay for it too. I've seen those guys. Just like the beach down there.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Rich people build on the Outer Banks and then rebuild and rebuild. Yeah. And well, rebuild,
like, it's crazy because like Lumberton is right to the south of us, you know, and like every time there's a hurricane, they get flooded for a month, mm-hmm, and they have to shut the schools down. So like everyone is getting that experience right now of like losing school and just every life shuts down. Everyone's getting that now. That's been happening in Robeson County, mm-hmm, for like decades. And so like the rich folks on the Outer Banks have like infinite money to rebuild their fucking beach shacks. And then like Robeson County can't keep school open, you know, like that's just the nature of, it's already like that and it's only going to get worse. So that's
one, it's one of those whole, what was the author that did the shoe theory of poverty? Was it Terry Brooks? The shoe theory of poverty? Pratchett? Terry Pratchett? Yes. Yeah. Pratchett. That, you know, a rich man could afford a $100 pair of shoes that would last him for 10 years and a poor man could afford a $5 pair of shoes that would last him for 3 months. And I mean, I'm getting all the numbers wrong, but we'll be paying so much more, but he just can't ever afford to buy a $100 pair of shoes. And at least in my experience, like not that this is even remotely relevant to most of our viewers, but I went to school in the Lumberton area for a few years, and unfortunately, you know, they weren't in the position to, mm-hmm, to be able to invest in that kind of improvement, you know, so you just kind of had to close your eyes and think of England.
Wow. It's like microtransactions instead of buying something outright. It's that thing where it's like you have to do the subscription model and pay monthly instead of paying for the whole year and getting a steep discount. Anyway, that's enough. Analogy.
Like decent risk management, like on a larger scale than just like individual people, like, well, insure your house. You know, like we're not going to do anything to deal with our infrastructure. If we were actually a little more, a lot more proactive as a society with our infrastructure, obviously a lot of things would be different. But like, if you want to know why we're not building this stuff, there it is. You know, like we're perfectly happy just outsourcing all the responsibility for storm risk damage onto individual insurance owners. Like, what's the point of preventing damage? There it is.
There's insurance as we know it, but then there's also insurance with an E, and that's the one that we're not investing in. All right. Well, that is all for our discussion on electric reefs. Tune in next week as we build a world based on what we've learned. Are you an expert in a field? Don't answer. Have your own questions or ideas for us? Send us an email at storysoilpodcast@gmail.com. Until next week,
parentheses outro, end parentheses. I'm committed to my craft.
I realize that. No, I do.
If you didn't expect this from me eventually, you don't. Like, you have no excuse.
Just check me out.
Yeah.
Me.
You're listening to the Story Soil Podcast, where we build science fiction and fantasy worlds from the ground up. I'm Lauren Harris, and I'm a basket of weagles.
Weagles. Caw, caw.
No, that's got to be in there.
That beat dropped it just the right time.
You should have kept going, man. Outtake. And that was our intro. Let's move on.
We're ready.
Yep, and now we move on. Part one, parentheses, topic, end parentheses.
No,
I'm serious. Keep going.
I know you're serious, but I like the intro.
The intro
I wrote
right
to bite
every
me.
Time. Well, I mean, no, but I love it. I love it.
No, it's new.
It was great. It was hilarious. It was.
Funny. I promise I'll put it in at the end.
Outtakes. out.
It won't be lost.
Okay, now parentheses, enter music.
Why would you do this?
Because I'm determined to get some of this into the intro. I'm going to do it every time until you give up.